I told you weeks ago that SmackDown was a three-hour show with a two-hour roster. And that is very evident, even with all of the Raw stars. We had a bunch of cameos tonight from Raw talents from Monday night that were on the show here tonight for various reasons. Obviously, they're getting ready for Saturday night's main event tomorrow. The Royal Rumble is coming up. Everybody is declaring. So they have talent that are going back and forth. But even still, you see what I mean when I say that a three-hour show with a two-hour roster is what you end up with when they have to stretch. And that's what they did tonight for the majority of the show. They were stretching for time. They were filling time. It was a filler episode of SmackDown for the most part. I will say that in the third hour, the show did get a little bit better. The best part of the show was honestly the last hour. But the journey to get there was hardly worth it. This show was an absolute chore to sit through tonight. And look, they're going back to 2 hours in a few months. I don't know exactly what the date is, but they're going back to 2 hours, supposedly in June. It's either May or June. So basically 6 months of this, and then the show goes back to 2 hours. But let's not delude ourselves into thinking that just because they go back to 2 hours in a few months means that everything is great with SmackDown. That's not necessarily the case. Because let's not pretend that SmackDown, even before the move to 3 hours, was great the last few months, even at 2 hours, because it wasn't. SmackDown has not been great for a while now. All right, let's just cut the crap and be honest. You may have weeks where they'll have a great show out of the blue, and then it'll go right back to the way it is. But at 3 hours, it's just, you can see that this show needs help. And they have begun to take steps to try to remedy that, because we still have this ongoing transfer window where they can just freely move talent back and forth as they see fit, basically, instead of a draft, which we really have no need for this year. There's an active draft that's been going on now for over a month with no end in sight. And so tonight, the big name that moved over from Raw to SmackDown, and it's a move that I approve of, is Damian Priest. Damian Priest needs to get far away from the Judgment Day. He vanquished Finn Balor on Raw in that street fight a few weeks ago, that great street fight. He had done all that he could possibly do on that brand. Wrestled Gunther multiple times for the World Heavyweight Championship, and of course, Balor and McDonough and Dominic. It was time. It was either Balor or Priest. One or the other, they had to move over to SmackDown. It was Damian Priest, and I think the change of scenery will be good for him, so I thought that was a good move. And then there were some other moves as well. You have Theory and Waller are going from SmackDown to Raw. I don't think that's going to make a fucking difference at all. I don't. All of a sudden, they're going to get a great push, or, you know, they're going to, come on. I mean, give me a break. There are a couple of bodies that are there. Triple H obviously doesn't give a fuck about them as a tag team. I can't believe they're still together as a tag team. So whatever they were doing on SmackDown, they're just going to be doing the same thing on Raw. And they weren't doing a whole hell of a lot on SmackDown lately. But they are now officially members of the Monday Night Raw roster. So we know that. The Miz is now on SmackDown. And he's not very happy about it because the Wyatt Six have also been moved to SmackDown. So now Miz has to continue to deal with Uncle Howdy and the Wyatt Six. I will say this, on the bright side of all this, we did get one cool announcement tonight, which is that the tag team titles are actually going to be defended on a PLE. When was the last time that happened? WrestleMania? The SmackDown tag team titles are going to be defended by DIY at the Royal Rumble against the Motor City Machine Guns. And not only are we getting a tag team championship match, it is going to be best 2 out of 3 falls. So I hope all the fans there in Indianapolis bring their best, because that has the potential to be a show-stealing match. And those four guys are getting a huge opportunity being able to go out there in front of 60,000 people in a stadium instead of SmackDown the night before, the way these things usually work. Because the only matches that have been announced for the pay-per-view were the two Rumbles and the ladder match. That's it. There had to be at least one more match yet. So 2 out of 3 falls makes sense because they're going to have some time to fill. But that could be great. As opposed to them doing it on SmackDown, you got commercial breaks. two out of three falls, you send those two teams out there, you give them time, you give them 20, 25 minutes, they're going to have a fucking show in Indianapolis. So I'm looking forward to that. That was one of the bright spots here on this show. But honestly, there wasn't a whole hell of a lot beyond that to talk about. It was a lot of hype because this was the go-home show for Saturday night's main event. We have the Rumble as well coming up next weekend. So this show was all about really pushing big matches for the next two shows. It wasn't so much about tonight's show. And I understand it. You know, you don't want to give away your big guns here tonight because you have a show on NBC tomorrow night. So I understand it. But just because I understand why they did it that way doesn't necessarily mean that this was a great show. It was not. For the most part, it was a fucking bore. You could see some of the building blocks, especially when it comes to a Carmelo Hayes and certain people who they're trying to at least get on television. That's great. But this show, my God. I don't know, man. On a Friday night, no less, you're asking a lot of people. 3 hours on a Friday night is a lot. We'll try to make this more entertaining than the show itself was tonight. This is your Friday Night Collision Review for January 24th. I am the Solemn Monster. You know, one thing you may have noticed about Raw, I mean, how could you avoid it, since they moved to Netflix, is the fact that they have all of the different sponsor logos all over the mat. SmackDown has not had that. SmackDown's had the new blue mat in recent weeks, but there were no ads on it. That is no longer the case. Tonight, there was just one ad. Right in the middle of the ring, they had an Angry Orchard hard cider logo in the middle of the ring. So that was the first sponsorship sighting here on SmackDown, for those who care about that sort of thing. On the eve of the contract signing, it's Saturday night's main event between Cody Rhodes and Kevin Owens. We had the WWE champion, Cody Rhodes, on his way to the ring for an interview with Joe Tessitore. And Joe asked Cody about his thoughts on potentially being champion only for one more week. Now, apparently, one thing I got out of this interview here is that they are going to take the titles tomorrow night. They're going to take the belts from both of them. So for the next week, Cody will not have his title. KO will not have the Winged Eagle belt. They're going to take them from them. And so when we get to the Royal Rumble, titles will be suspended above the ring for their ladder match. So they're going to be taking... Shawn Michaels will be taking the belts, I believe, from both men tomorrow night. Which will be funny because how long has it been since we've seen Shawn Michaels with the Winged Eagle? Probably 1998. We're going to see Shawn Michaels with the Winged Eagle tomorrow night for the first time in a very long time. It just feels right. So Cody said that with Shawn being in charge of NXT... he doesn't mind having a legend like him handle the contract signing. He talked about how having the WWE title means main eventing WrestleMania. And Tessitore reminded viewers how Cody was put on the shelf at the last Saturday night's main event by a pile driver. Not for very long, he wasn't. How long was Cody off TV for? 2 weeks? I thought they would at least wait until the beginning of the year. He was back before 2024 was even up. So he wasn't gone for that long. I think maybe it was 2 weeks he was gone. He asked Cody what he thinks about this more vile Kevin Owens. And Cody said, well, you can ask it in every locker room and you'll get a mixed bag of opinions on KO. He said, one thing that hurts Kevin is that when faced with the easy way and the hard way out, ten times out of ten, he will choose the easy way. Like, what do they say? One of the veteran pieces of advice in wrestling? Work smarter, not harder. Eventually, everybody realizes that. Sometimes, though, it doesn't happen until later in life. All the young guys go out there, they're doing all these crazy moves, trying to get noticed, right? Trying to up the ante and up the risk factor. Work smarter, not harder. I think that's a great piece of advice for anybody in any industry, whether you're a wrestler or not. So Cody said that's why a ladder match is so apt, you know, with no referee to make mistakes. Tessitore asked Cody what he would tell Kevin before they meet if they had the chance to meet one last time. And Cody said that he would tell Owens that he beat the ring general and he beat the greatest champion of the modern era. He's the son of a plumber, but the student of Randy Orton. He doesn't mind smacking Owens in the front seat of his car where he cuts his promos. He said he has only one thing to say to Kevin Owens: good luck. And with that, the segment ended. Pretty dull stuff here from Cody Rhodes. We've seen better from Cody on promos. This was very paint-by-numbers stuff. I mean, it was fine, I guess, for what it needed to be. It just wasn't all that great. You know, but we don't want to give too much away before the actual contract signing. Think about this. Like, we're not even getting the match tomorrow night. We're getting the contract signing for the match. And this was effectively the go-home segment for the contract signing. It's like a pre-show having a pre-show. So the idea here was, well, we can't really give too much away until tomorrow. We'll just send Cody out there to say stuff that we pretty much already heard him say before. Best thing I can say about this, I like how they had Joe Tessitore in the ring to do the interview. It's the first time he's done anything like that since he's become play-by-play guy, at least on SmackDown, doing the interview in the ring. And I thought he did a good job. He's very good at that. In the back, DIY and Pretty Deadly were having a conversation, and Johnny Gargano told Pretty Deadly that they would not be able to help them tonight for their tag team match, because Gargano had a match of his own against Apollo Crews. Ciampa isn't down with any of this Pretty Deadly crap, and he told them to handle their business. Gargano told them that they believe in them, and then DIY walked off, and Pretty Deadly ran into Legado del Fantasma. No words were exchanged. All they did was stare them down. That was it. But that led into the opening match between Pretty Deadly and the Motor City Machine Guns. Yes, indeed. The Machine Guns trying to recapture those tag team titles, trying to climb the ladder. Pretty Deadly, they cut the ring in half on Chris Sabin during the commercial break. Sabin tagged in Shelley, and he hit Wilson and Prince with a DDT and a flatliner at the same time to get a two count. Shelley caught Prince with a baseball slide. This was weird. So Alex Shelley hits a baseball slide to the floor, and in doing so, he knocked one of the apron pads off. And I realized at that moment, I said, I didn't realize that they added apron pads. This was the first time that I've noticed this. So I don't know if it was there last week. Again, I was in Chicago. I caught up with SmackDown after the fact, but I was kind of in a daze. But that's why there was no review last week. I was in Chicago for House of Glory. So I don't know if this was something that they added last week, but this is my first time noticing it. But yeah, they have pads now kind of on the apron. They're very inconspicuous, but they are there. So Sabin hit Wilson with a suicide dive as Shelley held the ropes open. Inside, Elton Prince tossed Shelley into Sabin to escape their skull and bones attempt. Kit Wilson hit Shelley with an assisted code breaker, and Wilson then took out Sabin with a DDT. Prince hit Shelley with an assisted bulldog for a two count. And the Machine Guns dumped Prince out of the ring after Shelley tagged in. They hit Wilson with skull and bones for the win. A perfectly solid match here, which was meant to... I mean, my takeaway from this is that it was meant to show Pretty Deadly, even though they always lose, and they're kind of treated like a joke, they can go in the ring. Now, at one time, they had a more serious run as tag team champions when they were in, you know, NXT, NXT UK, they were doing all that. You know, they have their gimmick. Obviously, it's very humorous, but these guys can work. And you got to see a lot of that here in this match, even though they still lost. But the thing with Pretty Deadly is that, you know, they do have a story. They're featured on the show pretty much on a weekly basis. And I'm not saying it's the most exciting story in the world, but there is an ongoing story right now involving them and DIY, and the Street Profits had been involved, which is more than I can say for other people on this show. At least they have something going on. Backstage, Nick Aldis met up with The Miz. Miz said that Joe Tessitore, look, he does a great interview, as he did with Cody earlier, but it's no Miz TV. And he wondered if he was there tonight to pop a rating. Basically, he didn't know why he was there. And Aldis had to inform him that he has been moved via the transfer window from Raw to SmackDown. You are now officially a member of the Blue Brand. And The Miz was shocked by this. He was taken aback and not very happy because he realized the Wyatts are now on SmackDown. And then it sunk in. He said, Cross. He realized that Karrion Kross was the mastermind behind all of this, or he assumed anyway. So Aldis told Miz that you better go find some friends. So let's talk about this here for a moment. I'll talk more about it on the podcast this weekend. But basically, we have found out in the last several days, the Wyatt Six, it sounds like, were not meant to move to SmackDown. And the only reason they were moved to SmackDown is because plans with Alexa Bliss fell through. There is an ongoing contract issue involving Alexa Bliss in WWE. She was supposed to make her return a couple weeks ago. Obviously didn't happen. And the two sides are currently at an impasse. The plan was for her to be involved with the Wyatt Six. Now, she was going to be on Raw. Okay, well, if she's going to be on Raw and involved in the Wyatt Six, then the Wyatt Six were always going to be on Raw. But then when this happened, the word came down. All of her creative was pulled. It was wiped. And that's when it seemed like it was a very sudden thing. They moved the Wyatts to SmackDown. That tells me they didn't have a plan for the Wyatts on SmackDown. And we may not see the Wyatts for a little while until they figure out what the fuck to do with them. So I'm not sure they have a long-term plan for these guys. But as it was on Monday nights, we hadn't seen them in a while. The last time we saw them, Uncle Howdy, I think, got pinned, right, by Karrion Kross. And how long ago was that? I feel like that was at least a month ago at this point. So now the Wyatts are on SmackDown, probably with no creative, because this whole Alexa Bliss thing blew up. So that's the latest on the Wyatt Six. Joe Tessitore and Wade Barrett, they checked in from the announce desk, but they were cut off by Kevin Owens, who was, yet again, he came out of the crowd, and yet again, he was wearing that awesome Bret Hart hoodie we saw him in the other night. You see it in the artwork here. You can kind of see the paint splatter. Honestly, that was always my favorite Bret gear. I think he wore that in 94. So he's wearing the hoodie, and he's got a t-shirt on that says Sami Zayn Forever, which I thought was great after their segment on Monday where he was completely gaslighting Sami and trying to convince him that he gave a shit about him and, oh, we're still best friends, you know? So here he is wearing a Sami Zayn t-shirt. And Owens slammed his Winged Eagle belt on top of the announce desk. He began to berate Joe Tessitore for his interview with Cody earlier, said, where's my interview? How come you're not interviewing me? He said, he's actually making him miss Michael Cole, but Cole is too busy kissing Pat McAfee's ass. Owens stood on top of the announce desk. He said he's going to prove that he is the rightful WWE champion. And then he stared at Matthew McConaughey, who is in the front row. They were in Texas, and I believe he is a Texas native, or at least he's there. He lives there now, and a big Longhorns fan. So, of course, Kevin Owens, he took a shot at him and said that he's going to beat Cody Rhodes just like Ohio State beat his Texas Longhorns. And boy, did that get him a lot of heat since they were in Texas tonight. Matthew McConaughey, by the way, he legitimately is a big WWE fan. So he was right there. I don't know if that was his daughter with him. There was a kid that was with him. I assume it was his. But he was right there in the front row behind the announcers for the entire show. Jimmy Uso made his entrance. And he confronted Owens. Owens went and got back into the ring. And Jimmy got in the ring. And he asked Jimmy, why are you here? And Jimmy said, because you talk too much. And then he attacked him. Owens rolled to ringside to avoid an Uso splash. Jimmy took the microphone and proposed the match between the two of them for later in the show. And the camera showed Matthew McConaughey approving of the move. He was very pleased with what he saw here in this segment. Carmelo Hayes was shown in the back talking to Nick Aldis. And Melo said, what the hell? Because I was supposed to wrestle him tonight. I was supposed to wrestle Jimmy Uso tonight. And Aldis apologized and said, look, I'll book you and him for next week. Okay, we'll do that match on the show next week. But I just recruited a new superstar over to SmackDown in the transfer window, and I think that you would make for a great first opponent for him. And Melo said that he didn't trust all this because he pulled this stunt once before with Braun Strowman. But he wanted to meet this man face-to-face first. And Aldis told him, well, stick around for a little bit because this new acquisition is on his way. We had Chelsea Green and Piper Niven against Meechan and B-Fab. Meechan dragged Green into the ring, went for eat defeat, but Chelsea escaped. Meechan went for a cannonball in the corner. Chelsea moved, took control. Piper Niven tagged in. She went for an elbow drop, but Meechan moved out of the way. B-Fab got the tag while Chelsea also tagged in, and B-Fab dropped her with the DDT and covered her, but Piper Niven broke it up. Niven slammed B-Fab, and Meechan drop-kicked Piper. Meechan and Chelsea, they ended up as the legal women. Meechan hit eat defeat, and she pinned Chelsea Green to win the match. And this was a nothing match. That's what this was. This was a nothing match. I'm not knocking the women. I'm saying they gave them 3 fucking minutes. Okay, you have a 3-hour show. And the thing about Raw, in the midst of when Raw was 3 hours, and you're trying to figure out how are you going to fill these 3 hours. One thing that we got from Monday nights, we would tend to get longer matches. They don't all have to be 20 minutes, but you would tend to get longer matches because you have more time to kill. You have more time to fill on 3-hour shows. And so here, you know, these women, they go out there and they still only got 3 minutes. Now, it's fine if they want to use the extra time to feature people like B-Fab more often. Because I heard that from people. Oh, well, SmackDown going 3 hours is going to be great for people like her, right? Like B-Fab or a person like Apollo Crews, because they're going to get television time that they otherwise would not get on a 2-hour show. That's great. The thing with someone like B-Fab is she doesn't get a lot of in-ring experience. They're running fewer and fewer house shows than they ever have, with even less to come here this year. So for the most part, not that they don't do them anymore, but for the most part, they're running TV. Yep, PLEs. B-Fab's not getting a fucking match on a PLE. If she's lucky, she'll be in the Royal Rumble next weekend, okay? This is all she has. She can go and practice and, you know, go to natty school or go down to the performance center and do whatever she wants and roll around and have practice matches. That's great. You can't replicate the experience of getting in the ring and wrestling in front of the crowd. So this is her way of getting in the ring and getting more reps. Now, maybe they're trying to hide her because she's still not quite as seasoned as they want her to be. But like, I look at someone like her, because Chelsea and Meechan, you know, I mean, they have a lot more experience. So whether they have a 3-minute match or a 30-minute match, it doesn't really matter. How is a match like this benefiting B-Fab? I mean, it's getting her on TV. And maybe she'll get over that way. Maybe she'll become popular. But I fail to see how something like this is going to benefit someone like her. I don't see, you can't. In a 3-minute match, you just can't do it. But what this did was, with Meechan winning, it sets up a rematch with Chelsea for the U.S. title. That match is going to take place on SmackDown next Friday. So that's when we're going to get the women's U.S. title rematch between those two. And then we can move on from this, because I'm just about done. Melo is in Nick Aldis's office. We go back there. And it turns out that the new acquisition is Damian Priest. He shows up. And again, a much needed move. Aldis asks Priest if he was interested in a one-on-one match tonight against Carmelo Hayes. And Priest says, well, I'm here to work. So they made the match official. And then for the second week in a row, we got a vignette for Charlotte Flair, showing her living very lavishly. And in this one, she spoke and she said, the GOAT doesn't have to call themselves the GOAT. She said she built a legacy that nobody can touch, and she knows exactly who she is. And then she said, I'm back. And she declared her entry into the Women's Royal Rumble match. She said, with a smile on her face and a tear in her eye. And I like that little nod to her dad and his promo, his speech after he won the Rumble in 92 with a tear in his eye. I'm going to tell you something right now, and I'm not looking to ruffle any feathers. I'm just going to be honest with you. When this promo started, and because they had close-up shots of her, and then she started speaking, but they had because the last vignette we didn't really get anything close up. It was her on a yacht, and it was her driving a car, and we kind of got her from the back and from the side, these faraway shots. And here they got up real close, and I swear, when they first showed her on TV, I thought it was Carmella. She looked totally different to me. I don't know what she did. I don't know what changed. I don't know if it was the camera lens. I don't know, but she did not look like herself. I guess we'll wait until the Rumble when she comes out and we'll see her live and in living color. But I thought it was Carmella. I said, Carmella's on her way back. I said, oh shit, that's Charlotte Flair. No, it's not Carmella. I don't know. Again, hey, whatever. It is what it is. But yes, Charlotte is back. Charlotte is going to be in the Royal Rumble, which I think we already knew. And by virtue of her declaring for the Rumble, she immediately vaults into the top position, the odds-on favorite to win the Women's Royal Rumble, which would be her first in 5 years if she could pull it off. I hope that doesn't happen. I am by no means rooting for that outcome. I think that her and Tiffany Stratton are likely on a collision course for that championship at WrestleMania, and I'm okay with them doing that match. But I want them to find some other way, whether it's a women's chamber, whether it's some other type of number one contenders match or a gauntlet on SmackDown between now and then. They could figure out any way they want to. But I don't really have any interest in seeing Charlotte Flair winning the Royal Rumble when I would much rather see someone like Io Sky or Bianca Belair. And then in winning the Rumble, they would then go on to challenge Rhea Ripley for the champion, for her championship at WrestleMania. That's what I would prefer. Bianca or Io? I'm actually fine with either one. I love Io, and Bianca's great. If you gave me the option, though, like my ideal WrestleMania match in Las Vegas this year for Rhea Ripley, and you put Bianca Belair and Io Sky in front of me, it would be tough, but I'm going with Bianca. I think I give Bianca the slight edge, but you can't go wrong with either one of those matches. I just would prefer not to see Charlotte Flair win the Royal Rumble. But again, she's coming back. It's her return. So, pretty damn good chance she's going to win the Royal Rumble. By the way, on that subject, I should mention, I think it might have been Fightful who was out with this report. But there is talk internally. They are discussing the possibility for WrestleMania of doing Rhea Ripley against Bianca Belair, as they should. Because her or Io, I think that is the best opponent for Rhea. So I'm glad to hear they're at least considering it. Now, we've heard so many reports in the last month about matches that are being discussed internally, right? I'm sure everything is being discussed. Everything is on the table. Although it's getting late, so they got to figure out what they're doing very soon. We've heard this about John Cena and Cody Rhodes. We've heard this about CM Punk and Roman Reigns. We've heard all sorts of things about matches that are being discussed. I'm sure they're all sitting in a room and they have a nice big board, big bulletin board. They may have 10 different matches listed out. That doesn't mean that it's going to happen. But I hope it does, because Rhea and Bianca, whether it's 41, 42, that's a WrestleMania match. Then it was Tiffy time. Tiffany Stratton, the new WWE Women's Champion, was out to the ring to address her public. Stratton said that everybody is wrestling in the Royal Rumble to face her at WrestleMania. She says she already beat last year's Rumble winner in Bayley, and the next contender will only be counting down to Tiffy time. She was then interrupted by the other champion, the Women's World Champion from Monday Night Raw, Rhea Ripley. Rhea gets in the ring and she says she knows Tiffany is new here, but she's here to let her know that she's women's champion too. Not that, you know, Tiffany is women's champion one and Rhea is women's champion two. She's saying that I too am a women's champion. I just had to clarify that. So Rhea said that from champion to champion, she respects what Tiffany did to Nia Jax, but it's not going to compare to what she is going to do to Nia at Saturday night's main event. And that brought out Nia Jax, who is basically on every show every week now. And she came out with Candice LeRae. Nia cut a promo as she was walking to the ring, said that she doesn't know why she has to catch strays from the two of them. There was a young fan in the crowd that said, Nia, you suck. And so Naya turned to this young child and told the kid that their mother sucks. Eggs. Their mother sucks eggs. Right? That's what Terry Funk would say. They were in Texas, after all, tonight. Shout out to Terry Funk, the late, great Terry Funk. So Naya then announced that she was entering the Royal Rumble, even though I could have sworn that she basically announced last week, but now I guess she formally announced that she is entering the Royal Rumble match and said she is not only going to enter, she's going to win the Royal Rumble. She says she's going to beat Rhea Ripley, of course, at Saturday night's main event, but she's still entering the Rumble to take back what Tiffany stole from her. So then we got the Revolving Door of Doom promo. This was a Vince specialty. He loved doing these types of segments, and you could pull them off occasionally, but they're just so, it's just such a trope. You know, one person comes out, another person comes out, then a third and a fourth and a fifth and so on and so on. And that's what we got here. So out next were the women's tag team champions, Bianca Belair and Naomi. They made their way out. And Naomi announced that she is entering the Royal Rumble and she's going to win. As opposed to what? I'm entering the Royal Rumble and I'm going to lose. Of course, I figured you were probably entering the Royal Rumble to win. So then Bianca Belair follows suit and says, I will also be entering the Royal Rumble. And I too will win the Royal Rumble. And then they had some friendly banter back and forth about how I'm going to win. No, I'm going to win. Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez, they made their way out next. Here on Monday Night SmackDown. Liv talked about how we have the woman over here who lost Dominic to a real woman, a Liv Morgan wannabe with the other title, and a bunch of other women claiming to win the Royal Rumble. Liv said that she doesn't care because the headlines won't be about anybody else but her. She then announced that she is entering the women's Royal Rumble match, and she is going to win. I have an announcement to make. I, too, am declaring myself for the women's Royal Rumble. And I, too, am going to win. Since everybody else is doing it, I may as well do it, too. This week's episode is sponsored by DraftKings. How about that game between Washington and Detroit on Saturday? The Commanders eliminate the number one seed Lions to move on to the NFC Championship game. Absolute madness. The joy and sorrow of football. As you can tell, the playoffs are in full swing, and you can get in on all the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. New DraftKings customers can bet $5 to get $200 in bonus bets instantly. And you've got a couple of big games today in the divisional round, so it's a great time to place your first bet. If you don't already have an account, go ahead and set one up in the DraftKings Sportsbook app. It's super easy. Once you do, you'll be able to check out the money lines for upcoming games. So the Rams and the Eagles, they play first today, and the Eagles have won their past 8 home games. So with that game taking place in Philly, it's no surprise that the Eagles are the favorite at minus 325, with the Rams at plus 260. Then later, we've got the Ravens and the Bills. You could tell from the odds here, because I'm in the app, this one's a little more even than that first game. The money line has Baltimore at minus 118 and Buffalo at minus 102. But that's not the only thing you could place your first bet on. You could check the app for the odds on top touchdown score, number of receptions, the outcome of the first drive of the game, even touchdown props. There's plenty to browse through here, but always remember, lines and odds are subject to change. Have I mentioned that new DraftKings customers can bet $5 to get $200 in bonus bets instantly? I did? Well, let me say it again. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SOLOMONSTER. That's code SOLOMONSTER for new customers to get $200 in bonus bets instantly when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. For additional terms and responsible gaming resources, see dkng.co/audio.
So then Rhea, she floors Liv with a headbutt. And it sounded like a wicked headbutt. And almost instantly, the reason it sounded so good is because she fucking headbutted this girl in the head. And almost instantly, you could see that there was a red welt on Rhea's face, like right underneath her eye. And I'm just thinking to myself, did she injure herself again on that fucking headbutt? That's how she broke her orbital socket last time. She needs to be careful with these headbutts. Somebody needs to remind this woman it's work. So a giant brawl breaks out with Rhea and Naomi and Bianca. They clear the heels from the ring. Nick Aldis begins to head out from the back, and they very abruptly just cut to a commercial. I'll give you one guess. I'll give you all one guess what we got. We came back from this commercial break. Indeed, we got an impromptu six-woman tag team match with Rhea Ripley, Bianca Belair, and Naomi against Nia Jax, Candice LeRae, and Liv Morgan. And Rhea started the match, and the welt on her face was very noticeable. I thought I even saw a little bit of blood there. Naomi and Bianca, they got involved, and they did a move where Rhea and Bianca, they suplexed Naomi over onto Nia, who was laying on the mat. Bianca started pounding on Liv after she tagged in, but Candice interfered, and Liv started pulling on Bianca's braid. Nia tagged in, ragdolled Bianca, and then set up for the Annihilator, but Bianca pushed Nia over the top and out to the floor, and with that, the show went to a commercial break. That's right. We got a tag team match, playa. You could set your watch to it. You knew it was coming from the moment they cut to commercial. So the show comes back. Liv Morgan had the upper hand on Naomi. Nia tagged in, hit a splash on Naomi, and then followed that with a stink face. Jax attacked Ripley on the outside of the ring and then merrily jogged away, which made me laugh for some reason. Liv did the same thing to Bianca. All of this allowed the heels to triple team Naomi. Naomi, though, fought back and landed an X-Factor on Candice, and Rhea hopped back up on the apron and got the hot tag. Liv Morgan tagged in. Rhea went to work on Liv. And here I thought we were done with this, and here we are yet again, Liv Morgan against Rhea Ripley. Bianca tagged in and went for a moonsault on Liv. Morgan got her knees up. Things broke down. Rhea set up for a riptide on Nia Jax, but Liv jumped on her back. And so what she ended up doing was hitting Liv with a riptide on top of Nia. Bianca hit a KOD on Candice, but then Liv Morgan grabbed Bianca into a crucifix and got the surprise three count. Well, you can rule out Liv Morgan to win the Women's Royal Rumble match. But I think we all ruled out Liv Morgan to win the Royal Rumble before she even declared for the match. So anyway, this was your standard comeback from break, multi-person tag team match, nothing special. But it's a way to get all the different people, all the key players in the Women's Rumble match involved in one match here. And I'll tell you what, if Rhea hurt herself, and I don't think if she hurt herself that badly, they would have allowed her to be in the match on the flip side of that commercial break. But if she hurt herself, then maybe we can get the cool mask back that she wore at Survivor Series. She only wore it for the one night. I wouldn't mind seeing that mask again. That was a pretty badass mask. We had Johnny Gargano against Apollo Crews. You know it's a filler episode when we get an Apollo Crews match. You know, it's also incredible how DIY, you know, they had new music. A while ago, they were given new music. Gargano was given new music. But it's incredible how they somehow managed to give DIY music worse than what they had before. And what they had before was not great. Somehow now, it has declined even more. Apollo caught Gargano with a moonsault off the apron. And Gargano escaped a frog splash attempt and hit Apollo with a super kick for a near fall. Crews hit Gargano with his military press into a standing moonsault, also for a near fall. Gargano dodged a stinger splash attempt and hit Apollo with a backstabber. Both men traded right hands. Gargano distracted the referee. That allowed Tommaso Ciampa out on the floor to catch Apollo. He ambushed him. He blindsided him with a knee strike. Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin begin to make their way down to the ring. And this is very distracting to Tommaso Ciampa and to Johnny Gargano. But only Johnny Gargano was wrestling. And so he's in the ring. His back is turned. And that allows Apollo Crews to roll him up for the win. This was Apollo Crews' first win on SmackDown in a while. It's his first win on SmackDown since September when he beat Giovanni Vinci, who I'm guessing most of you have already long forgotten about. But remember, he beat Vinci. It was maybe 90 seconds, if that. And speaking of Vinci, you hear a lot online these days about tribalism, right? You hear that word thrown around, and there's a lot of tribalism on both sides of the aisle. WWE fans and AEW fans, they are just loyal to their brand. They're loyal to a fault. They're like little foot soldiers in a giant geek army. So there's a lot of that going around, and you hear about it. Triple H is great. Tony Khan sucks. He doesn't know how to book. Maybe it's the flip side. Maybe it's the opposite of that, right? But you hear a lot of that back and forth. I think it's time that we have a conversation about how badly Triple H buried Giovanni Vinci. And you know I don't use that word lightly, because that word gets thrown around a lot. I think a lot of people don't even know what it means. They think if you lose one match, you're buried. And that's not how that works. But I think at this point, it's safe to say, after those vignettes and trying to give him a little bit of a reboot and looking at what happened with him, Triple H buried this man beneath the earth's core. Not saying that he did it maliciously, but that's exactly what's happened to Giovanni Vinci. He has not been on television in months. There was no rebound. There was no comeback. There was no story. Let it play out. Okay, here we are almost in February now, right? There is no playing it out. It's played out. And I'm not saying that Giovanni Vinci was going to be a top player. I'm not saying Giovanni Vinci was going to be a world champion. But this is a brand that could use some strong mid-card heels right now at that U.S. title level. You don't think that he could not have contributed something to this show? You don't think they could have tried to build him into some kind of serviceable heel? Or maybe even a babyface? I could see somebody like him and the way he works getting over as a solid low to mid-card babyface on the show. You know, try to get some value out of him. And they got nothing. Nothing at all. It's not even like they're using him as just like, you know, as a jabron on the show where he's just going out there to lose to people. He's just not on the show. And I just, it's that sort of thing that I don't understand, where you film these vignettes with him where he's driving a sports car and he's in a hotel overlooking some, you know, great view, and you're really building to something for somebody that you have absolutely no plans for. You have absolutely no idea what to do with. He's still employed. As far as I know, he's probably there every week, right? He's basically the hall monitor or the catering monitor in the back. And maybe outside of a dark match that I don't hear about, they don't do a whole hell of a lot with him. So for all of the positives that Triple H has brought to the table when it comes to his booking and his storytelling and who he pushes, there are also examples like poor Giovanni Vinci, who gets paid to come to work and do nothing. He'd fit right in AEW, but he's not in AEW. He's in WWE, and it's happening there too. And I think it's about time that somebody brought that up, since everybody seems to have forgotten about this guy, myself included. Tama Tonga and Jacob Fatu were walking backstage. Jacob Fatu cut a promo. I love the fact that they're allowing him more speaking time. Hyping his matchup with Braun Strowman on Saturday night's main event. He said that even though it feels like Godzilla versus King Kong, he goes, it's not, because Fatu is both. He's both of them all in one. And he told LA Knight, who was wrestling Tama Tonga up next, he said that Tama Tonga was coming for him, and Fatu then accompanied Tama Tonga through the gorilla position on his way to the ring for the next match, which was LA Knight versus Tommy Tonga. You know, it's the little things that really make me laugh. That's what I love about LA Knight and his promo style. Besides the fact that you could tell exactly who he borrowed and gained influence from. And that's part of what makes his promos so entertaining. I mean, look, if you're going to borrow or be inspired by certain people, you may as well be inspired and borrow from the best. And this, his cadence and everything, it's just, you know, I hear Steve Austin every time he speaks with a little bit of rock sprinkled in there. But he comes out and nobody in wrestling today cuts promos the way that he does. It really does sound like something that would be a throwback to the Attitude Era and the way that he delivers it. So when he drops a line like the Oofalafa, when he was talking about the Oofalafa a few weeks ago, and it's such a stupid thing to say, but like I crack up laughing. So he's on the apron addressing Tama Tonga and Jacob Fatu, who are in the ring, and he's, you know, cutting a promo on them. And even just something as simple as him calling Tama Tonga Tommy. Good old Tommy Tonga. It makes me laugh. And I don't know, it could just be the fact that I was so fucking bored by this show tonight that I was just looking for anything to entertain me. And that's what I latched onto. It could be that. But I laughed when he called him Tommy Tonga. I think I'm going to call him that too. So Knight had control early, and the action spilled outside. Tonga threw Knight into the crowd barrier. Then he walked the barrier, and he clotheslined Knight off of it. And the two of them got back in the ring. Knight hit a springboard shoulder block for a two count. Big back body drop by LA Knight, and he clotheslined good old Tommy over the top rope to the floor. Knight followed him out there, and Tonga rammed him into the corner of the ring steps, and that took us into the commercial break. Later on, Fatu climbed up onto the apron where he tried for the BFT, and that allowed Tonga to get a roll-up in. In the end, though, Knight did hit the BFT, and he got the win. I'm glad he did, because I was a little worried it was just going to be a DQ. And I'm like, come on. You took the U.S. title away from this guy. He's still super over. I don't even know at this point if he's going after Nakamura anymore. But he's still over. You took that mid-card title away from him. He's not touching the world title anytime soon. At least give this guy a fucking win over Tama Tonga. Like, you don't have to do a DQ to protect the bloodline. So thankfully, he got a clean pinfall win over Tama Tonga. But immediately after he did, Jacob Fatu dragged him out to the floor and dropped him onto the announce desk. And before he could demolish this man, Braun Strowman's music hits, and he comes down to the ring. Fatu and Strowman, they stared each other down. They circled one another. Tama Tonga hopped up on the apron for the distraction. Fatu came in for a corner charge. He missed. He struck the top of the ring post, and then Strowman clotheslined Fatu out of the ring. That is the match I think I am most looking forward to on Saturday night's main event tomorrow. And earlier in the show, they had a pretty cool, almost like a tale of the tape type of video package comparing Strowman and Fatu. It's the battle of the bulls, you know? And again, Jacob Fatu has not had very many singles matches. This will only be his second, I believe. And his first against an opponent even bigger than him. But you look at what Braun Strowman did with Bronson Reed on Raw and how much fun that was. I think these two will go out there tomorrow, and I think they're going to have a kick-ass match, and I'm looking forward to it. And it should be, I mean, we'll get into the predictions in a little bit, but I think it'll be yet another showcase for Jacob Fatu as they very slowly begin to build him for something much bigger. I don't know when they're going to go to a match with him and Roman Reigns. Would I love to see it at WrestleMania? Sure. Do I think that that's going to be the match for WrestleMania? I don't know. But it doesn't have to be a WrestleMania. But Roman Reigns against Jacob Fatu is a big money match. And we need to get that at some point. But now they're in that mode where they're building Fatu up on his own. You know, he's still technically with Solo Sikoa, who we did not see this week. So he's still part of that crew. He's still loyal to Solo. He's not standing on his own yet, but he's being allowed to stand on his own a little bit more. And so this is just part of that process here. They showed The Miz in the back, and he was talking to Austin Theory and Grayson Waller, trying to recruit some new friends. And he pitched the Marine 7 and convinced them that they would all be rich. Nick Aldis walked in and told Waller and Theory, guys, by the way, you're officially moved to Monday Night Raw. And Waller and Theory were very excited. Of course, why wouldn't they be? They're bored by this show, too. They're figuring at least on Mondays we have a chance. Miz was not as excited as they were. Miz was not happy about this. He was left very confused. We got a Shinsuke Nakamura video package he talked about with subtitles, as they usually do. And he talked about how anybody who comes for the U.S. title, you will leave with nothing. He said he's going to be in the Royal Rumble. Talked about winning it once before, which was 2018. He's not winning the Royal Rumble, but smart to point out the fact that he is a former Royal Rumble winner. I think sometimes people forget that just because, you know, since that initial year, he's never been pushed at the same level. You know, he's been at that IC US level. He was in a tag team for a while. He never regained that status that he had when he was in NXT and when he first came to the main roster. You know, he had what I thought was a disappointing match with AJ Styles at WrestleMania that year. Disappointing maybe because I was expecting it to resemble something like their first match, and it wasn't anything close to that. I do think their matches actually got progressively better because they had a few more after that. But, you know, you get out of 2018 and he never got back to that same level again. So the idea of him going in there now, and they're trying with him. I mean, they gave him this new presentation and the updated theme music, and he's got a belt. That's great, but this is about as far as he's going to go. You know, the version of Nakamura, the kind of the New Japan version of Nakamura that people were hoping to see, it's not happening. You know, he's older now. He has since re-signed at least once with WWE. He's obviously very content there. And I get it. You know, I get it. You do the WWE thing and you don't have to kill yourself the way he was doing in Japan and live your life and make your money. And hey, what's not to like? But he's not winning the Royal Rumble. And there isn't a person on the face of the earth who believes that he has any possible chance of doing so. We had Damian Priest one-on-one with Carmelo Hayes. Priest wanted a test of strength. Melo gave Priest some strikes instead. And Priest hit Melo with old school into a crossbody for a two count. Melo was able to duck a strike. He sent Priest into the ring post. They come back from break. Melo hit Priest with a flip dive. After that, he caught Priest with a crossbody for a two count. Priest came back with a broken arrow and then hit Melo with an elevated flatliner. Melo ducked out of the ring to avoid a clothesline attempt, and Priest ran and tackled him over the barricade, and Lillian Garcia had to get the hell out of the way. Priest high-fived Matthew McConaughey at ringside, and he should have done the whole Wolf of Wall Street thing with him. That would have been fun, right? Pound the chest. Priest sidestepped the nothing-but-net attempt and turned Melo inside out with a lariat. Down came the straps. And he finished things with the South of Heaven chokeslam to secure his very first win here on Friday night, which was never in doubt. You know, I want to mention this about Carmelo Hayes, because I think there may be people who end up getting hung up on the fact that he lost again. And I agree, at some point you want to change that, or else you end up becoming Chad Gable. And as great as Chad Gable is, unfortunately, he lost so often that I do feel like I almost feel like whatever they do with him from this point forward, there will be a segment of the fan population that will simply never see him at a high level. You know, and they may never see him that way anyway because they're hung up on his size or whatever, which I think is stupid. But what's not stupid is the fact that he has lost so many matches. And so many matches in big situations, I get it. It's hard to look at somebody like that after all of that and take them seriously. And you don't want to get into that territory with Carmelo Hayes. So he has to start winning some matches at some point. But I look at what they did with him on the show tonight, and even over the last several weeks, he's a very consistent part of the show. You look at tonight's show, he appeared in no less than four segments. Two backstage segments with Nick Aldis, right? He had a match with Damian Priest, so that's three. And then a backstage segment that led into something out in front of the people with Jimmy Uso at the end of the show. So he was all over the show tonight. And he's already got a match scheduled for next week. So this is all part of the building process for him. Now, he's somebody who also, I think, could benefit from moving in the transfer window. I don't know if they're going to do that or not. It doesn't look like it. I think Raw would be, you know, a good change of scenery for him, but he is being featured. I certainly hope, unlike with someone like Vinci, that there is a plan for him. And I think him being featured as much as he is, because that television real estate is very valuable. You find yourself in four or five different segments on a show in one night, they're not trying to bury you. If they wanted to bury you, they wouldn't even have you on the show in the first place. Or they would have you in one segment, and you'd get squashed in 90 seconds, and that'd be the end of it. You wouldn't even have the time to speak and have promo time. And he does. So before people jump on and go, oh, they're burying Carmelo Hayes, I don't look at it that way. All right? It may get to that point, but no, they're not burying Carmelo Hayes. You have to look at it in a different way and recognize that there are a lot of people on that roster who would love to be featured in the way that he is and get the TV time that he gets. So let's see where they take him, because I do have optimism that they will do right by him. He's a great talent. But let's not throw the B word around with him when there are other people that you can certainly use that word for. He's not one of them, though. Today's episode is sponsored by Hims. This goes out to all the guys out there who are listening to this right now. And there are many. It is a pro wrestling audience, after all. Many of you may feel like you are fighting a losing battle in a handicap match with hair loss. Okay? It's not something that people like to talk about. It makes you very self-conscious, and it may be causing you a lot of stress in your day-to-day life. And my father's hair started thinning in his late 20s, so I know this isn't something that's only limited to the older demographic. And you may feel like there's nothing you can really do about it, but that's just not true. Hair loss is a very common problem, more than you may think. And Hims Hair Loss Solutions may be the answer for you. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. And when you do, you could start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient and quality access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from your own home. Hims makes treating hair loss simple. With doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. And you've got choices. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, serum treatments to find what works best for you. Hims makes the process simple and convenient, and it is 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. You don't have to worry about sitting in a waiting room. You don't have to have a whole conversation face-to-face with anybody in person. Super convenient. Just answer a series of questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is then sent directly to you for free. You don't need to worry about insurance, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. So don't waste any more time. If you've got a pen handy, jot down this website, or better yet, type it in right now. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/solomonster. That's hims.com/solomonster for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/solomonster. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information. We had DIY in the back with the Motor City Machine Guns, and they were arguing, and they had Nick Aldis in between them. Chris Sabin noted that Ciampa and Gargano have been ducking them. And Shelley said that Nick Aldis booked DIY against the Motor City Machine Guns at the Royal Rumble for the SmackDown Tag Team titles. And not only is it going to be a championship match, it's going to be best 2 out of 3 falls. So there's no more running. There's no more hiding for DIY. And I love it. I just love the fact that tag team titles, one of the sets of tag team titles, are actually being defended on a major PLE. That doesn't happen very often. Like, I legitimately don't think those titles have been defended on a major show like this since WrestleMania, when they were first split. That's how long it's been. It's inexcusable to have two sets of tag team titles and they're relegated to just, it's like they're TV titles. So that's number one. Number two, these teams are great, and I think they're going to complement each other very well, and I think they're going to go out there and have a great fucking match. And you have to have more than just two rumbles and a ladder match. This is the perfect thing, I think, to add on to that show. Look, they may want to open the show with one rumble. I get that. Open with the women's rumble, maybe close with the men's. This would be a great opener for the show, but I think opening with the women's rumble is probably what they'll do. And then they'll probably go into this next. But I'm just happy it's actually happening there and not on SmackDown. They showed Michelle McCool in the front row. She was loving life. And then next to her was Mark Henry. So because they were in Texas. So some local Texas celebrities there. And just off camera next to them in the front row was Matthew McConaughey. They showed him a whole bunch of times on the show tonight. We go backstage. Damian Priest is walking and he runs into Cody Rhodes. And Cody says, "SmackDown, eh?" And Priest says, "Looks like it." But as Cody walked off, Damian Priest said, "See you soon, champ." Elsewhere in the back, Miz was sucking up to Andrade, saying that he can help Andrade become the superstar that he truly is. And Andrade said that he likes that idea. But he walked off saying that he'll find someone to fill that role. After Andrade left, Jimmy Uso walked up to Miz and clowned him a little bit. Jimmy walked off and ran into Carmelo Hayes. There he is again. And Hayes said, now they're wrestling next week. Hayes said that it's going to take a lot more than 4 moves to beat Kevin Owens. And Jimmy told Melo that next week it'll only take 3 moves for me to beat you. So Jimmy started making his entrance. And he didn't see that Hayes was following right behind him. So when Jimmy went through the gorilla position and he came out on stage, Hayes ran up behind him and ambushed him from behind. Referees and producers ran out and they dragged Melo to the back. So just a little tease for their match next week. But after a break, it was Jimmy Uso in the main event here on this show against the uncrowned WWE champion, Kevin Owens, wearing a Naomi shirt, which was fucking great given who he was in the ring with. This from the Sami Zayn shirt earlier to the Naomi shirt. Feel the glow. Kevin Owens was feeling the glow here in this main event. Although not feeling the glow quite as much as Jeff Jarrett was on Dynamite on Wednesday, where he was literally glowing on my television screen. Owens quickly rolled to ringside to stall, and he yelled at Joe Tessitore. He also got up in Matthew McConaughey's face. Jimmy caught up with him and tossed him into the barricade. Owens gave Jimmy a shoulder tackle and then a running senton, and Jimmy managed to come back and hit Owens with a clothesline to turn the tide. Owens ducked out to ringside for a breather, and Jimmy slammed his face into the announce desk a few times and then flashed a longhorn sign to Matthew McConaughey. Owens knocked Jimmy flat off the apron and then hit him with a frog splash to the floor ahead of the final commercial break. They come back from break. Owens was in control. Jimmy fought his way to his feet with a right hand, actually a series of them. Owens came right back with a shoulder breaker and then focused his attack on injuring Jimmy's left arm. Jimmy blocked a swanton bomb with the double knees, hit Owens with a running hip attack in the corner. Owens came back and caught Jimmy with a blue thunder bomb for a near fall. Owens and Jimmy, they traded super kicks, and Jimmy got the better of it. Owens was able to avoid an Uso splash. Jimmy blocked the stunner attempt and hit Owens with a spear, but as Jimmy headed up for an Uso splash again, Owens dragged him down and then sent Jimmy's injured shoulder into the ring post and then followed in the ring with a pop-up powerbomb, and he got the win. And they were running out of time. They were 2 minutes to the top of the hour, so Owens quickly dragged Jimmy outside and on top of the announce desk. Owens yelled at Matthew McConaughey before Cody Rhodes' music hits, and here comes the WWE champion sprinting down to the ring. Owens meets him in the ring, and the fight is on, and they brawled around ringside with Cody having the advantage as they went off the air. And I could not believe, and I don't know if I was the only one, I could not believe that they ended the show and went off the air without doing anything, like a spot in the front row with Matthew McConaughey. Like, I was stunned by this. I thought that all of these mentions and Owens yelling at him and the interactions with him was leading to something very similar to what they did on SmackDown many years ago with Triple H and Arnold Schwarzenegger, where Triple H took a shot at him and Schwarzenegger avoided it and then decked him. And it was this big thing, and it got them all kinds of news media, and the crowd went crazy for it. And then, Arnold shared a beer after with Steve Austin. I thought they were going to do something similar here and kind of get that big moment with McConaughey, you know, maybe taking a shot at KO and then celebrating with Cody. I was stunned that it didn't lead to anything. I mean, they definitely gave him plenty of FaceTime tonight, and they kept mentioning him over and over again. But what a missed opportunity that was. I mean, it was right there. Unless he didn't want to do it. I have no idea why they didn't do something like that. But again, a very paint-by-numbers ending here. We had a little brawl between them, nothing we haven't seen before. There was nothing left to do. You know, we have a contract signing tomorrow night between them, and they're not doing the match for another week. There's nothing else to do. So this is what they came up with. I didn't even mind the ending so much. I just wish that the first, 2 hours of the show or 2 hours and 15 minutes or whatever it was, wasn't so fucking boring. This was a largely filler episode of SmackDown. Sitting through 3 hours of this show is a fucking chore. I mean, there's just no other way to put it. And it's something we're going to have to deal with if you want to watch the show for another 5 or 6 months before they switch back to 2 hours. But, as I said at the beginning, it's not like going back to 2 hours is going to be some magic pill that makes the show as good as it was last summer. Because SmackDown went through this period where the show was on fire last year, but that was a long time ago. SmackDown has not been like that in a while. They have not been able to recapture that spark. And part of it is this bloodline story. First of all, the main players are almost never there altogether. That's number one. Number two, the bloodline story has jumped the shark. So whatever twists and turns are still yet to come, like those, I'm not saying there's no good moments that aren't left. Solo leaving, or Jacob leaving Solo, or some kind of a big turn there, or the debut of Hikuleo, or The Rock getting involved, right? Which is always possible. There can still be some big moments and chapters to be written to this story, but the over-reliance on the bloodline for so long, when the bloodline isn't there or the bloodline is not featured in the way that they used to be, it has highlighted some major holes in this show. And that's what happens when you rely on the same act for so long and either you don't have it anymore or it's not as popular, it's not as hot as it used to be. You start to look to everything else on the show and you realize just how weak they are in terms of, the tag division. And they're trying, they were pushing that whole issue with the machine guns and the Street Profits. But the tag division really on both shows is just kind of a fucking mess right now. And then as far as the rest of the show is concerned, they need more stars. They need to make more stars. They just need more people. And they need to do a better job of featuring some fresh faces, maybe calling up some people from NXT. Where's Roxanne Perez going to land? Is it going to be Raw? Is it going to be SmackDown? It looks like she's going to be doing something with Bayley. Maybe that means Roxanne goes to Raw. But You know, she's only one person. You know, you can call up a few different people and add some new blood to both shows. But SmackDown really needs a kick in the ass right now, especially if we're expected now. Yeah, it's bad enough we have to do it on Mondays. At least Raw, for the most part, has been a pretty good show. I cannot say the same for SmackDown. Something's got to give here. June is still a long ways off. But even when we get to June, and we're back to 2 hours, they've got to shake things up here on this show. And the transfer window is a way for them to get some new faces in there, as they did with Damian Priest. That's a great first step. I think American Made should be shifted over as well. Again, I was confused when they shifted the Wyatts over because it just didn't make any sense. The issue with them in the Final Testament was never resolved in light of the Alexa Bliss stuff. It's almost as if they moved the Wyatts. I'm not saying this is why they did it, but when I read that report and it was like Alexa was going to do something with them and she was going to be on Raw, but then, you know, she kind of had her representatives try to negotiate a better deal. It's almost like, you know, it pissed WWE off. And so they scrapped all of her plans and said, you know what? We're just going to take the Wyatts and move them to SmackDown. Fuck you. And they did it without having any real plan in place for them. Because I would have rather have American Made move over and just leave the Wyatts where they were. But whatever they decide to do, this show needs a reset. It needs a shakeup in the worst possible way. Because it's just boring. That's the worst thing that you could be. It was certainly the most boring show of this week. And that includes Raw and that includes Dynamite. Now, tomorrow night is Saturday night's main event. Let's run down the card as it is, and then I will give my predictions. Just so you guys are aware, there will be no live review for Saturday night's main event. I will not be here. I will be at the House of Glory show. I hope some of you will be there as well tomorrow night, 6 p.m. But I will talk about the show on the podcast on Sunday. So just be aware of that. But you know who else will not be there tomorrow? Hulk Hogan will not be there. Hulk Hogan, despite all of the rumors about him being there, and he was in the commercials for it, right? They didn't outright say he would be there, but the expectation was that he would make an appearance, especially because he missed the first one. Because he was at the UFC show. He will be at the wedding for his son, Nick. So he will not be there. Jesse Ventura, however, will be there. And that's really all that matters. So the body will be back in San Antonio. And Hogan gets spared the Boo Birds. We have a contract signing, as I mentioned. Cody Rhodes and Kevin Owens will make it official. Shawn Michaels will be there to officiate the contract signing. There is some sort of addendum that is being added. Now, did they mention that word tonight at all? I don't think they did. But that was the talk, that there was some sort of addendum that was going to be added to the contract. I don't know if they've abandoned that idea. Did they mention that word tonight? I don't think they did. So maybe that's no longer the case, but they'll make it official tomorrow night. We have also on the show Jacob Fatu going one-on-one with Braun Strowman. I'm looking forward to this. Jacob Fatu is going to pick up a win, no doubt about it. But that's going to be a lot of fun. Rhea Ripley is going to defend her Women's World Championship against Nia Jax. And Rhea Ripley, of course, is not losing her championship after just winning it back. Rhea will win. We have Bron Breakker and Sheamus for the Intercontinental Championship. This one is the hardest match to call because it could go either way. And I don't know. I mean, maybe this is a little out of left field. I don't get the sense that most people actually expect there to be a title change here, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that there is. And even though I would rather they hold off until like a WrestleMania or a big stadium show, but I think we're going to have a new Intercontinental Champion tomorrow night. And I think that we are going to potentially have an Irishman and an Irish woman as Intercontinental Champions at the exact same time. Interesting, it is also the first time that the Intercontinental title is being defended on a Saturday night's main event since Shawn Michaels beat the British Bulldog for it on the very last episode that they did in 1992 before they rebooted it in 2006. That was Shawn's first singles title in WWE. You'd have to go all the way back to 92. It's been a while. There's a title change on that show. There could be a title change on this one. I'm going with Sheamus. And we have Gunther defending the World Heavyweight Championship against Jey Uso. And look, it has been very noticeable how they have brought up the fact that Jey Uso has already lost to Gunther twice. Gunther is giving him no chance. He is so condescending and dismissive of this man. And it makes you wonder. It makes you wonder if they're going to shock the world. And maybe it's not the IC title that changes hands. Maybe they actually change the World Heavyweight title. And they give Jey a short run, right? He doesn't go into WrestleMania. I don't really see the point in that. I wouldn't do it. I don't think they're going to do it. I'm going with Gunther to win. And I think that Drew McIntyre is going to play a role in Jey losing this match. Because Drew McIntyre is not going to be happy about the way that Jey Uso beat him on that first Raw on Netflix. He's going to want some revenge. So that's how I see it all going down. And that's it. It's a short card. Not much else unless, what else are they going to announce? They don't have any time. The show is tomorrow. So that is your Saturday Night's Main Event card. And again, I will be sure to talk about that on the podcast this Sunday. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. What did you think of SmackDown for January 24th? 44% thumbs up for tonight's show compared to roughly 56% thumbs down. Sidro, is it five matches? No, I think it's four matches and a contract signing, right? I just gave predictions for four matches. It's four matches and a contract signing. But anyway, a thumbs down overall for tonight's SmackDown. Not an offensive show, but a boring show. Sometimes being boring could be even more offensive. But anyway. Let's take a look at your super chats here. Thank you guys for the support as always. Yeah, Roderick, I think that'll fill the 2. Plus all the commercials and everything and the hype for the Rumble, they'll fill the 2 hours very easily. I'm curious how most of you are going to watch it. I think I watched it on Peacock. Because it's simulcast on NBC and Peacock, so I do wonder how many people are going to choose to watch it on there. Got to give a shout out to AdoniX96 coming in with a super chat. When did WWE put the wrong match in the main event slot at WrestleMania? I would say 18, 23, and 25. Also, favorite and least favorite Mania that you attended live? Favorite Mania that I attended live was 30 in New Orleans, by far. Least favorite was probably 29 for a few different reasons. First of all, it actually rained a little bit at the very beginning, but it went away pretty quickly. I used to look at those WrestleMania trips, and I do kind of miss them. But I used to look at those WrestleMania trips as my vacation, my one vacation that I would take every year. And I would go with friends and there were so many different events going on. I would do a sound-off meetup and meet a bunch of fans of the show. And I did a live show once in Dallas. It was awesome. 29 was in New Jersey, right? Like, 29 was local. And it's like, fuck. You know, I mean, 35 was too. Actually, you know what? Maybe I would go 35, honestly. Thing is, 35 had Kofi Mania. And that was such a great moment when he won that championship. You know what? I take that back. I think I would go with 35. I think the last one I went to was probably my least favorite. Cause at that point I was just tired of it. Like the shows were just too fucking long. and they hadn't started the two-night format yet. So they're trying to shove as much as they possibly can, and you're getting these six-hour shows, and it was just like, this is ridiculous. But we also had the Randy Orton and AJ Styles match, where a lot of us had that bright light shining in our fucking face. So I missed the whole match, because I just got up and I went, you know, inside onto the concourse, figuring I'll just watch it on TV, and they didn't even have the match on any of the monitors out there. So I missed that whole match. And they put the women's match on in the main event, and it was raining, and everybody was tired, and then it ended up being, like, a very disappointing match. You know, with a botched finish. So, that is not one of my favorite WrestleManias. 30, though, by far, is my favorite that I attended live. And that's, like, the whole experience. Not even just Mania, like, the whole experience. New Orleans was great. That's why I was excited to hear that they might possibly be going back to New Orleans next year. It's not confirmed yet, but sounds like Mania 42 may end up in New Orleans, which I am all for. As far as the first part of your question, boy, you asked a lot, didn't you? When did they put the wrong match in the main event slot of Mania? 18. 18 for sure. Rock and Hogan should have closed the show that night. I'm going to say 25. You're right on that too. Undertaker and Shawn, that should have closed the show. I think those are probably the most glaring ones, honestly. Holiday 197, hey Solo, what are your thoughts on bringing back Cyber Sunday or Saturday as a pay-per-view? I really like the concept of fans choosing opponents for title matches and match stipulations. As a pay-per-view, absolutely not. But they don't have pay-per-views anymore. They're PLEs. So, yeah, if they want to do it, they can do it. I would not want to pay $50 for a pay-per-view with a bunch of matches that I don't even know what they're going to be. I think it's a much better concept for TV than it is for a pay-per-view, but Peacock and these streaming specials, you could do it on there. That's fine. But I honestly was never a fan of it. I was never a big fan of it to begin with. It just, you know, it's just, I just didn't like it. Heart of Debonair. Hey, Solo, I watched an old video of yours, and you said that the chase is always better than the rain. Outside of Hogan and Cena, name some baby faces who had an entertaining world championship run. I enjoyed Bret's runs as champion. You know, Austin was a combination of both. You know, a lot of it was the fun of the chase and him trying to overcome Vince McMahon and the corporation. But, you know, even when Austin had the title, it was a lot of fun. So I would say Austin is another one. And as far as a fun championship run, like more modern. I don't know. I mean, Gunther had some bangers as the Intercontinental Champion. Those were pretty fun. But yeah, I think by and large, I mean, the chase, that's the story. You know, the chase is the struggle. It's the struggle to get there. You know, when the dog catches the car, he doesn't know what to do with it. So you end up with a lot of these title runs where it's like, all right, well, we got what we wanted, and after a while, the fans turn on that person, right? Because they're very fickle. It's the way it works. Eric Deshawn, given his demotion and his recent tweets, do you foresee Corey Graves requesting his release and wrestling on an independency? Why would he do that? He was already back on Tuesday. So, no. Corey Graves is not going anywhere. Corey Graves is going to be a good little soldier, and he will remain in WWE. David Thering breaking in our new $30 super chat. Brother Solo, after doing a quick search online upon seeing the name of the super chat, because I couldn't remember where it came from, I thought to myself, oh, how will you work with this? Well, now we find out. Yes, indeed. I could always rely on David to break in the new ones. Well, David, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it was worth it. Fire Panda with the $48 super chat. Look at Fire Panda. If I was a defense lawyer, here is how I would get my clients off the hook. I would say, Your Honor, my client pleads oopsie daisy. Yes, and you would be disbarred. Base Beerus, thank you for the gifted membership. Noel Mulligan, hi Solomonster. Hi, Noel. Thank you for the $2. Chris AXC, that was some pile driver that Kevin Owens gave Randy Orton, huh? 3 months? Bianca hasn't felt this unimportant in ages, if ever. Mania title match predictions. As far as Bianca, all the more reason why I think she's got one of the better shots at winning that Women's Rumble and should win. All you need is one Royal Rumble win to get you back on track. And she'll feel important again. But how does Jade factor into this? Is Jade going to be a surprise in the Rumble, right? It's possible. But yeah, as far as Mania and the title matches and everything, I don't know. Gotta think about that some more. George says, just saying thanks for giving us all some entertainment to get us through these tough times. George, that's what I'm always here for. Whatever tough times there may be, you could always rely on me. And Liver Morgan. But Jeremy says, do you think any chance Hogan was originally supposed to be involved in the Cody and KO segment, but replaced by HBK due to the booing on Raw? I don't think so. I think they were in San Antonio, and Shawn Michaels is from San Antonio, and it was always going to be him. Sidro is with us. How many members of the IWC does it take to put up a light bulb? 100. 1 to screw it in, 99 to complain how it's not like the light bulbs from the Attitude Era. You know what's sad is that that's actually, there's a lot of truth. I think there's a lot of truth to that. Fisco 95. And yes, thank you. I did hear it. I always enjoy a good beat. Fisco says the best part of this show was Matthew McConaughey. It would have been if he had actually punched Kevin Owens in the face at the end. I still can't believe they didn't do that. Jeremy says, buy or sell Kevin Owens, Drew, and Seth forming a modern-day Shield or NWO to battle the Bloodline. It's not a modern-day Shield, but the idea of them getting together and forming some sort of alliance, I think could be very entertaining. Joseph Stewart, should Raven have been the one to end Goldberg's streak? No. We've got Avwunu. Even at 2 hours, this show would still suck. Absolutely nothing was entertaining. Women's segment felt like a we need to waste time segment. That's the thing. That's the thing when you have 3 hours that you have to commit to, because that's what USA Network wants. Everything has to be stretched. You got to fill time. That's what it is. And there's just not enough on this show to fill those 3 hours up in a way that's entertaining. Sidro, want to hear a wrestling joke? David Otunga. Also, what did Kevin Nash say when he crashed his ATV? Arg, my quad. # I love you so. Are we still doing quad jokes? I thought those were played out at this point. RVD and Jeff Hardy get in a car. Who's driving? The cops. RVD had two titles, and he fucked it all up. He had two titles. He was on top of the world. and he screwed it up. Joseph Stewart, will Dominic Mysterio be the next face of WWE in the future? Also, will he be the face of WWE? No. Do I think that he will potentially be a world champion one day? Yes. I think Dominic is very entertaining, especially if you ever listen to him when he does interviews. I'm talking like media stuff, podcast stuff, WWE on YouTube. He's actually very entertaining. Also, will we see Dominic Mysterio against John Cena before John Cena retires? I'm going to say yes. Base Beerus, Matthew McConaughey for GM of SmackDown. I'm all for that. I think he would do great in that role. Heart of Debonair, rewatch, save, delete forever. Mania rivalry, HBK Taker, Cody Roman, Rock and Austin. I am going to rewatch HBK Taker. I'm going to save Rock and Austin, and I'm going to delete Roman and Cody. Face Beerus, so is Charlotte the female Cena? I think she's been the female Cena for a while. She's got more titles than any other woman in the history of that company. So, that right there makes her the female Cena. Cena's got 16 world titles, soon to be 17. David Thiering with the 23 says, to make up for Hulk Hogan reportedly not being at Saturday night's main event tomorrow, and because why not, after a boring SmackDown, he gives us the $23 super chat. Good luck at Hog tomorrow, Commissioner. That show honestly sounds more exciting than SmackDown was tonight. Oh, I guarantee you that it will be more entertaining than SmackDown. We got Ricky Starks coming back too. Second week in a row. First time was in Chicago. Now he's making his New York City debut. Got Kenta coming in. We got Rhino getting in there with Zilafa too. It's going to be a good show, man. Kurt Angle's going to be in the house, man. He's going to be doing a meet and greet. It's going to be great. Holiday says, SmackDown was dull and phoned in tonight. Thoughts on rumors of WrestleMania 42 in New Orleans and 43 in Indianapolis? I don't know about 43. I think Indianapolis is not getting it for a while. They're getting it, but it could be years from now. Because remember, they signed like a 7 or 8 year deal for various shows. So I don't know about 43. 42 is sounding like New Orleans, and I love it. I'm all for it. Marquand says, Naomi is entering the Royal Rumble to shake her booty and then leave. You say that like that's a bad thing. Look, I declared for the Royal Rumble before, too. Maybe I'll just come in and shake my booty and leave. Hype Man Slimy. Do you prefer being a face or a heel? And why? In life? A heel. I just feel like being a heel would be more fun. Face Beers, how do you cook your burger? Rare? Well, rare or well done? Medium. I cook mine medium. Well, I don't cook, but when I have a burger, I make sure that they are prepared medium. Base Beer says, then Loa forever. Blue Jay. Need a Solid Monster Chi-Town Smart JD Pod ASAP. We all got our own things going on, brother. You can get us multiple times during the week. Jeremy Rose, more shocking Royal Rumble return. Enzo, Riddle, Cardona. Are we talking this year? What would be more shocking would be Enzo. Cardona wouldn't shock me at all. And Riddle, I feel like Riddle eventually will be back. Bobbert Reviews with the $40 super chat. I hope that Jey Uso wins the world title just to see if Sami Zayn would get jealous and turn heel because Jey got it first. It's interesting. I don't think that would be the case. I think that Sammy would be happy for him. And I also feel like if Sammy was going to win his first world championship, that, you know, it would be or should be as a babyface. Because that's a babyface story. Like, Sammy finally wins the big one. I don't think he would be jealous of Jay. I think Kevin Owens would. I don't think Sami Zayn would. Jeremy Rose with the 12. Think the story they are telling with Carmelo is NXT star coming to the main roster thinking he's better than he is, getting humbled with losses, but eventually he's going to figure it out and start winning. Yeah, I think it'll be something like that. You know, you could tell that they obviously think highly of him, you know, other than the fact that he was the first draft pick for SmackDown. There will come a point where, again, there has to be a turn here where he begins to win more than he loses. But for now, again, he's going to be fine. I'm not worried about him. Like, there are people I'd be worried about. I'm not worried about him. I think he's going to be okay. Facebeer says, Goldberg emoji looks like Shrek. Well, that's because Goldberg looks like Shrek. He also says, Kevin attacked Matt in the parking lot off the air. Matthew McConaughey? It took me 5 seconds to realize who the hell you were talking about. No, he didn't. That'd be funny if he did, though. He should have done that, actually. He should have given him a pile driver on the concrete out in the parking lot. Super Pony, does Shawn Michaels get a package pile driver tomorrow night? I hope so. Maybe it'll knock his eye back into place. Wouldn't that be something? Yeah, I mean, I think Owen should do something. Because Cody was really putting Shawn over in the promo. You know, as a legend. And he's guiding the future generation of stars down in NXT. And so, I would want him to really show his sinister side. And maybe even get Cody tied up in the ropes. And he's helpless and all he could do is watch. And then Owens does something like that to Shawn. I think you want to do a heavy angle. Because this is the big go-home angle. It can't just be, oh, we signed the contract, cut a couple promos on each other, and that's it, right? There's got to be more to it than that. So I think they should do something along those lines. Jeremy Rose, plus they're in San Antonio, so you really want to get heat, you beat up Shawn Michaels and send him out on a stretcher in San Antonio. Jeremy says, I don't see anything major happening tomorrow. Triple H has continually gone the safe route. He has played it safe many times, and what I just talked about, I would love to see that, you know, angle play out that way tomorrow night. Dark Effect, thank you for the 5 gifted memberships. Thank you, brother. M. Mills with the 25. Thank you very much, as always. M. Mills showing her support. Coach sipping Jamba Juice out of a straw with the $5 super chat. If you think Triple H is doing a good job booking, I have a bridge to sell you. He is the drizzling shits. So, Coach, not a fan of WWE. I know he'll be watching Collision tomorrow night instead of Saturday night's main event. Alex Ochoa, ringside WrestleMania tickets for night one are $11,000. You can get the two nights for $15,000. Too rich for my blood. I'll be watching from the comfort of my own home. I'll be watching from my iPad. I'll have to watch it from the iPad so I could take notes here while I watch it on the iPad. While all you people are watching it on your big 65-inch TV, I got my 10.9-inch iPad. I'll be watching WrestleMania. George, again, thank you for the $15. I appreciate it. Justin G, sorry I'm late. Been a bad day. Have my thumbs up. Well, Justin, I'm sorry about that. I hope your Saturday is better than your Friday was. Demetrius Hodge, who do you think will be the Nash 94 spot in the Rumble? Jacob Fatu. Justin G, since Angle says he hates Perk, can we say Peak? No, you can just say Kurt. It's Kurt Angle. That's who he is. Nick Grosso. I don't know if it's true, but I heard Jacob Fatu may start being referred to as Tribal Wolf. If true, time for Jacob to oust Solo. I mean, Tribal Wolf may be a nickname. He's going to be Jacob Fatu. I don't know where you heard that, but... No, his name is Jacob Fatu. He should face Roman at WrestleMania with Fatu going over and The Rock giving him the Ulafal. Well, I don't know about that, but I would love to see Roman and Jacob. Absolutely. I would love to see that at WrestleMania. Tonga Loa Superfan is with us with a $20 super chat. Official prediction. Tonga Loa returns and wins the Royal Rumble. He beats Cody at WrestleMania for his belt. He beats Roman at Survivor Series. I assume that's SummerSlam. For the Ulafala, he beats Cena in his last match of the year. He challenges Rock for WrestleMania 42 and earns the moniker of the Secret Boss. Yes. And then Tony Khan buys WWE when the business completely tanks. Tony Khan swoops in and purchases WWE. All thanks to Tonga Loa. Now that would be something. Yeah, David, that's my response. He's smoking the good stuff. That's what he's got. All right, we're at 422 likes. So we're not getting two rounds of Be the Booker. We're only halfway to the other goal, unfortunately. But we will do the one round of Be the Booker. And since I'm not going live tomorrow night, we're going to have to make this a good one, because this is all we got. So, fingers crossed. Let's see how things go here. Boney says, looking at the WWE's history, is the U.S. title the worst booked of all the major titles? Oh, I don't know. The Intercontinental title went through like a 7-year period where it wasn't defended at WrestleMania. I'd say that's pretty bad. But, I mean, how... You say major title, so I'm assuming you're not including the women's tag team titles in that. I don't know, dude. It's been better the last couple of years since Gunther had it, but they treated the Intercontinental Championship like shit for the longest time. That title took some abuse. So it's nice to finally see it at least, you know, get some love, although Bron Breakker hasn't done shit with it since he won it back. It's almost like they're regressing again. I think I might have to go IC, honestly. And IC, I mean, that's their title. You know, the U.S. title, they just brought it in after WCW. You would think the Intercontinental title, they would have treated it with more respect. For so long, they disrespected that title. It killed me.
Why is Solomon Monster a punk hater? Why does he hate punk so much? What did he ever do to him?
Fire Panda with another $48 super chat. Look at little baby Fire Panda on fire tonight. Tonga Loa then goes to New Japan and wins all of their titles. And then to TNA, and then Hog, and then GCW. And at the end of it, all Tonga Loa gains the name The God of Wrestling. I think we finally figured out what Tonga Loa is doing at home as he sits there waiting to get cleared from his injury. I think we finally realized who Tonga Loa Superfan is in the Super Chats. It is quite a coincidence that Tonga Loa Superfan first appeared around the time that he went down with his injury. I see you. I know what you're doing. Be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the Booker.
You'll be disappointed to know that Tongaloa is not in Be the Booker as a solo. The Gorillas of Destiny actually are in tag team Be the Booker, but Tongaloa as a solo act is not in Be the Booker. All right, here we go. Let's see if we can pull off a clean sweep tonight. We begin with Owen Hart and the British Bulldog, former WWF Tag Team Champions. And great champions they were. Owen Hart and the British Bulldog will take on the British Bulldogs. Well... this is, what was it the other night that we had in the main event? It was, oh my gosh. I already forgot. We had the mirror match in the main event. I think in the last stream. Somebody will remind me who it was, but the British Bulldog and Owen Hart against the British Bulldog and the Dynamite Kid. I gotta tell you, as a match, what a fucking great match this would be. Holy shit. Oh, yes, it was Kenny Omega. We had Kenny Omega versus Kenny Omega in an exploding barbed wire death match, and in the graphic for that match was Kenny Omega. So we go from that to the British Bulldog now facing himself. I don't know what's going on with this Be the Booker thing, man. This is kind of freaking me out a little bit. Whose side is Davey on? Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. It's a great match, though. Women's Be the Booker, we have Zoe Stark, who absolutely obliterated poor Dakota Kai with a missile dropkick on Raw Monday. Now, she dropkicked her into the next dimension. Zoe Stark is going to face Becky Lynch. Yes, Daddy Ugarte says the algorithm wants what it wants. I guess so. I've created a monster here. This thing has a mind of its own. Becky Lynch and Zoe Stark could be a good match, right? We did get that match, didn't we? When Zoe was with Trish, we must have gotten Zoe and Becky on Raw. I think we did. Wasn't that the night they brawled into the crowd and they went off an equipment case through some tables? I vaguely remember this. Okay. 2 out of 3 so far. Here we go. Main event time. It is Shinsuke Nakamura, who I was just talking about earlier in this stream, the reigning United States champion, the former IWGP Intercontinental champion. Shinsuke Nakamura battles Sammy Guevara. This is our main event. And I am going to give it the bell. That's what I'm going to do. I had to think about that one. But I am confident in my decision. We have like a 50-50 mix in the chat of bell or buzz. I give it a bell. We got our clean sweep, though. So we got what we wanted there. Apparently not a fan.
You suck.
Not a fan, David. David Thiering with the $23 super chat. My response to these Tongaloa fantasy booking ideas is this super chat. Justin G says, Loa Sapiens, rise up. And David Thiering says, be the booker, show in an alternate universe. Kenny Omega versus Kenny Omega, Io Sky versus Io Sky, which we had not that long ago. And the tag team be the booker match tonight. And you know what? It would be the show of the year. I'd watch that show. Hopefully, you guys, if you're not tuned in to Saturday night's main event, and frankly, you don't have to be, because the House of Glory show starts at 6 p.m. Eastern. And if you're not there, you could stream it on Triller TV Plus. So you can actually watch at least part of the Hog Show and listen to yours truly on commentary before Jesse Ventura does commentary on Saturday night's main event. So you get the best of both worlds. But I'll watch the show when I get home, and I'll have thoughts on Sunday. That'll be episode 898. Are we really going to be two away from 900? That's crazy. Episode 898 of The Sound Off, coming later in the afternoon on Sunday. So be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great weekend, and hopefully I'll see some of you guys at the House of Glory show tomorrow, 6 p.m. live on Triller TV Plus. Until then, take care, guys.